world of mental health, exploring all things related to daily living. Your hosts, Benny Massey, LPCC, and Earl J. Bell, LCSW.
And here we are with another episode of On the Couch. My name is Earl J. Bell, LCSW.
And I'm Benny Massey, LPCC, and you are on the couch.
In previous episodes, we've explored different therapeutics, modalities, techniques, and skills, and it gives the listener a better idea of what to look for and maybe find a therapist who practices the type of therapy which would benefit them better than maybe a different type of therapy.
And tonight we've chosen the technique of cognitive behavioral therapy. Cognitive is a fancy word for thoughts, and one of the essential beliefs of cognitive behavioral therapists are that you cannot have a behavior without the thought.
Yes, definitely, Benny. And one thing we'd like to do tonight with our listeners, we'd like to encourage you to call in and ask questions or make comments or tell a little anecdotal stories if you'd like. Our number is 917-889-3093. And so to build on what Benny was talking about, cognitive behavioral therapy basically says that your behaviors are based on thoughts that you have. Is that a way to sum it up, Benny?
I would say so. And the more negative your thoughts, the more negative the behavior, or angry, frustrated, attitudinal, the behavior becomes. So, and it doesn't have to be one thought. Usually it's a flood of thoughts.
Yeah, and the thing about it also, if you have negative thoughts, then obviously negative and unrealistic thoughts, then it can cause you great distress and, you know, different types of issues within your day-to-day living.
Absolutely. So one of the things that we like to look at is how to challenge those thoughts. It's very important that we try to challenge those thoughts and explore those thoughts and see if they're accurate or are we on the wrong track. It's important to not just go with the thought, but put some thought, more thought behind it and challenge it to see where you are and if you're perceiving the real situation.
Right, because one thing that can happen is whenever a person has, you know, psychological distress, it can kind of interfere with how they look at certain situations, and in turn, it can have a negative impact on the actions that you take. So, you know, what CBT aims to do is to help people, as you put it, become more aware of the thoughts that they're making and how they interpret those thoughts. And that way, the behavior patterns can also be explored and how to change those based on your thoughts.
And the founder of this theory and technique is Aaron Beck is the founder. His daughter is also involved in the teachings and the training for therapists to become cognitive behavioral therapists. I actually met her. Her name is Judith Beck at a training, probably was 20 years ago. But there are different tools that you can use. There's something called a cognitive behavioral therapy chart that we can distribute to our clients to help them identify different areas and challenge the thought processes and rate their mood and their feelings, as well as put down what quickly comes to mind first. And we challenge them to go beyond that initial thought, whatever those thoughts are, and to push yourself further. What else might it be? Is that thought 100% accurate, or could it lend to something else, a different thought? So we challenge them to do that.
And so also, if the thought is actually, you know, inaccurate, there's a term that they use in cognitive behavioral therapy called cognitive distortions. And can you kind of talk a little bit about how cognitive distortions affect people and what kind of effect those distortions can have on an individual?
Yeah, they often reinforce negative thought patterns or emotions, which in many ways pour out and can cause a dissonance or problematic issues with, you know, how you see, how you relate, how you respond. So it's important for us to try and, again, challenge any of those thoughts that, and I would say challenge every thought, even if it might be a good one. If you think it's not that this is definitely what they're presenting or this is definitely how they're coming at me, I would challenge you to look for the alternative thought. Look for with cognitive behavioral therapy, there are two kinds of thoughts that they identify. It's automatic thoughts and alternative thoughts. Most of the time, we go with the automatic thought. The automatic thought is the thought that jumps out, you know, comes first.
And one of the things that kind of triggers those automatic thoughts also can also be, in CBT, it's called polarized thinking or even black and white thinking, where, you know, you look at a situation and either it's right or wrong or simple or complex with no gray area. And a lot of times when people get stuck in the one or the other, there might be something in the gray area that they need to explore, you know, because if you don't explore the middle, you instantly get stuck on one side or the other, and that's not always the appropriate place to be stuck.
I would agree with that. And I think a lot of times we ignore those areas of gray, but those areas of gray are very important. And it's an area that we need to focus on in order to give weight to, evaluate, and not just jump into one camp or the other, but to really try to understand.
Yeah, and I think another way that people come up with their thought processes that are kind of distorted is catastrophizing, or it could be called magnifying or minimizing, either or. Can you kind of open our eyes a little bit on that, Benny?
Yeah, catastrophizing is when you're all in on one of those distortions, pretty much. It's when, and I use that term a lot, that you're not, I might even go and say you're making it worse, but you're blowing it up to the point where it has to be this. There's no other alternative. There's no other a possibility that it's something else, and you're really making it grow more than what it is. So we really encourage you not to catastrophize. I think at times we all do that. We all go to that point or place, but it's important to, again, challenge that and know that there are areas of gray and to look at those areas of gray.
And I think the thing that's really important, what you said as well, a lot of times all of us will at one point or another go to the point of catastrophizing some type of event. But I think the important thing to remember is the difference is if I'm able to, once I realize that, oh, wow, I catastrophized this event and bring myself back, then the event and the catastrophic thinking won't have as much of an impact on me. I think when someone gets stuck in the catastrophic thought is when it starts having a detrimental effect on not only their mental well-being, but also their physical well-being. At that point, it's time for the individual to seek out a therapist who can help them confront those irrational thoughts, the catastrophizing.
I agree. And I can recall, I mean, I think many of us can recall times in our lives where we thought, oh, this is, you know, we've gone to the brink. It's all over. This is horrible. This is the worst thing that could ever happen. But yet you've lived to move beyond that. And it's easy to get stuck in that funk, but you have to remember that we kind of are the drivers of our destiny, and we kind of direct our lives on our thoughts. And if we can put that cognition in our head that this too shall pass, we will move beyond this. It's not as bad as I thought it was going to be, then that often can lift us up and help us move past it a little bit quicker.
Right. And also, a lot of times when people are experiencing these distortions, they can also have, it's called control fallacies, where the individual thinks that everything that happens to you is either all your fault or not at all your fault. And in the second one, not at all your fault, that allows the individual to escape responsibility or taking any responsibility for their actions, their behaviors. And usually it's a distorted thought, again, that's driving that. Whereas if you think everything that happens to you is your fault, then you start blaming yourself, and that can lead to depression as well. Because if it's my fault that, you know, I had a flat tire this morning, then, oh my goodness, I'm not going to make it to work. I'm going to lose my job. I'm such a terrible person. And that's one thing as well about these distorted thinking, these distorted thoughts. You kind of start down a rabbit hole a lot of times with one, it can lead to another, and that's where the CBT takes time, as you said earlier, to kind of work through those different thoughts and how to, like you said, confront the thoughts.
To evaluate, and I like that control fallacy that you talked about. You said it's either all my fault or it's none of my fault, and usually there are areas of gray. It's not all your fault, and it's not none of your fault. And if you get into the place where you're blaming everything on everyone else, you're not giving yourself room for improvement or to evaluate how you could have dealt and handled things differently. Also, if you're blaming yourself for everything, it usually isn't the case as well. It takes two to tango. That's the saying for a reason.
And we want to encourage callers now to give us a call. Our number is 917-889-3093.
On the Couch, your connection to the world of mental health. Exploring all things related to daily living. Your host, Benny Massey, LPCC, and Earl J. Bell, LCSW.
And so now we're back. And again, give us a call, 917-889-3093. And you can let us know if you've had any experience with cognitive behavioral therapy if you'd like, or ask us questions. So now that we've identified some of the different cognitive distortions and the thought processes that need to be confronted, help us understand also, Benny, what cognitive restructuring is, because that's a tool that you'll hear a CBT therapist use.
Cognitive restructuring, in layman's term, is challenging those thoughts. And we've kind of talked a little bit about challenging those thoughts, but as the thoughts enter your head, enter your mind, we encourage you to search for the alternative thought, and not only challenge it, but think of all the other possibilities. I'll give you an example. I usually give this to my clients when I see them. You asked a girl to go to the prom with you, and she agrees to go with you. And once you get to the prom, they play your favorite song. You enjoy it, you love it, and you want to dance with her. But your automatic thought is, I can't dance. Everyone's going to laugh at me. She's going to tell me no. I'm going to step on her feet. It could be hundreds of different thoughts that could discourage you from going there and asking her. We encourage you to have that alternative thought. And what might that alternative thought be? Well, the lights are low. No one will see me. She asked me, or I asked her to come to the dance, and she agreed. So she likes me. These thoughts battle and push back on those negative thoughts, which give you the courage to step up to plate and do what you need to do.
Yeah, totally. And the good thing also about cognitive behavioral therapy, it can be used to treat depression, PTSD, and anxiety as well. That's why I strongly want to encourage our listeners, if you have any of those symptoms, look out for a therapist and try to find one. And if you think that cognitive behavioral therapy is, you know, something that sounds good to you, reach out to a therapist and ask them, do you guys do cognitive behavioral therapy? So, yeah, and that's kind of where we are right now.
We're encouraging you all to please give us a call. Our number is 917-889-3093. Again, that is 917-889-3093. We await your calls, your feedback, your questions, anything you would like to contribute to the conversation.
Yes, and now that we've talked about cognitive behavioral therapy, we can kind of move to maybe talking about other types of, not necessarily therapy, but skills and techniques that can also help with the anxiety, like guided imagery. Benny, give us a heads up on what guided imagery is and what it can be used for.
This is a technique that I use often. A lot of clients have some difficulty utilizing it because they feel like they are unable to go into that realm of imagination, but guided imagery does take imagination. And guided imagery is placing yourself in a state where you do some self-talk and you visualize a place that is special to you, that makes you feel comfortable, that makes you feel relaxed, that makes you feel good. And a lot of times I utilize the Grand Canyon or the beach in Florida, or, you know, and you can use any place you want, but you go further than just visualizing it. You go to feeling the moment, feeling the environment, the weather, the sun, if you're at the beach, beaming down on you, feeling the sand underneath your feet and on your skin while you lay in it. It can be a very powerful tool to use.
And the important thing to think about also, you know, you said that you have to have use your imagination and guided imagery. The important thing to think about also is a lot of people may not feel that they have an imagination, so they're not going to be able to use it. But I think the key word also within the title is guided imagery. It's easier for an individual who's maybe not real imaginative, or, you know, doesn't feel like they're very creative, to actually go into an imagination type setting if the therapist is guiding them into it. You mentioned the Grand Canyon. For me, I consider to think about the Grand Canyon, I think about a big hole in the ground. Mm-hmm. But with an expert guided imagery therapist, that would allow the therapist to take me to the Grand Canyon and discuss it, and for me to imagine it in a way different than just a big hole and see it for what it really is, an amazing work of nature.
I understand, and I agree. Usually when I use guided imagery, I allow my clients to choose the place, and I would ask them, have you visited any place? If not, have you looked at any magazines or longed to go to any places? The Eiffel Tower, the Great Wall of China, any of these places that you have respected and looked at with awe, you can go to those places. And I encourage them to get magazines and books that present those places where they can see the pictures. And as long as you have a visualization in your mind, we can go there. And Earl is right. Initially, I think it's important to have the therapist guide you through this this therapeutic intervention. However, there should come a time, if you were able to visualize it and experience it with the therapist, there should come a time where you can do the self-talk and constantly maintain that therapeutic intervention by yourself.
And also, that's one of those therapeutic techniques and skills, like you say, that you can do on your own, either sitting at home or even sitting at your desk at work. You know, if you just have a couple minutes after you've learned it well enough, you can just, like you say, take yourself and in your own mind, leave where you are, leave the trauma, the stress, and the chaos that's going on in your life just for a few minutes to regroup your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I think it's also important to realize that that's one of those things that, like you say, you can do almost anywhere, but it's really important that the individual knows that they're not dependent upon the therapist to use the guided imagery skills once they learn them.
I agree. And it does go beyond just speaking of the place that you want to go and visualizing. It takes some exercises, which include diaphragmatic breathing, deep breathing exercises, relaxation techniques that allows the body to succumb to relaxation and release. It's very important to get the body prepared before you go into the guided imagery exercise.
And we want to encourage you to give us a call, 917-889-3093. And back to what you were talking about a few seconds ago about the breathing. So the breathing for guided imagery is more than just take in a deep breath, let out a deep breath. Take in a deep breath, let out a deep breath.
Most often when I ask my clients and people, do you know how to relax? Do you know how to do deep breathing exercises? They say, yeah. And when they demonstrate it to me, they breathe in, out. That's not how you do it.
Then can you explain to us how you do deep breathing, Benny?
It's very important to slow those breaths down and control the breath. The skill of deep breathing and diaphragmatic breathing, like I like to call it, breathing from the diaphragm, is about controlling the breath. So you breathe in and you hold it. And I would say hold it for about 5-6 seconds. Then you blow it out completely until your lungs are expelled with air. There's no more air, oxygen, whatever you want to call it, in the lungs. So this is how you would do it. Breathe in through the nose and hold it. Slowly blow out. One more time. Breathe in through the nose. Hold it. Slowly blow out.
During these breathing exercises, what does the therapist do besides just coach the client to how to breathe in, breathe out, blow out, and all that? Does the therapist take a more active role beyond training the individual how to breathe in and breathe out?
What I usually do is I'm breathing with them, so I'm talking them through it, but also I'm implementing the guided imagery piece. I'm reinforcing, I would call it peaceful rhetoric, that, you know, you're in a safe place, you're feeling, you don't have any obligations right now, you're not on a time schedule. This is your time to let go. And so there is some feedback, some direction that you give to the client. But at this point, you're focusing on the breathing because you want them. What the breathing does when you control it is it slows that heart rate down. When you breathe in and out just regularly, in and out and in and out and in and out, it doesn't slow down that heart rate. But when you breathe in and you hold it and then you breathe out slowly until it's all gone, you control that heart rate and you lower it.
And that's one of the things that helps you relax as well. The fact that, you know, when you slow your heartbeat down, you know, it allows you to relax and chill a little bit more. And the breathing, it's like you say, as you breathe slowly in, slowly out, your whole body does kind of start to relax as well. And, you know, what you mentioned earlier about how during that process, you know, you engage in the guided imagery discussions and talking about the Grand Canyon, for an example. Those are all the skills that the client themselves will be able to take with them from your office after sessions, learning how to combine the deep breathing along with the imagery. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And the other piece that we implement into that is the tightening of the muscles, the tightening and the relaxation, the tightening and the relaxation. What we're trying to make you aware of at this point is you're in control of your body. And you tell your body what to do. And that tightening and tensing, and I encourage them to feel the tension, feel the stress, feel the body when it is stressed, when it is aching, when it is tense. Hold it, same like you do with the breath. Hold it, feel it, experience it, and let it go. Release. Feel the difference. So you go through a lot of that to get them to see the difference.
This is On the Couch, your connection to the world of mental health. Exploring all things related to daily living. Your host, Benny Massey, LPCC, and Earl J. Bell, LCSW.
And back to talking about guided imagery. I think you were talking about how you encourage the client to feel the tension in their muscles and, you know, learn how to release the tension and those different things as well. Can you kind of also talk to us about how guided imagery can be used as far as the anxiety? How does it change your anxietal thoughts and feelings by just, and I'm going to oversimplify it here, talking about the Grand Canyon?
It places you, it takes you out of that stressful situation if you can submit. And I have had clients who have had difficulty submitting and being vulnerable enough. You know, they might not want to close their eyes. They might not want to submit. They might not want to do the breathing exercises. They're too concerned on what you might be doing that it becomes difficult for them to do. But it's very important for them to do that in order to get the full effect.
Right, definitely. And, you know, like we said earlier, along with cognitive behavioral therapy, and when we spoke of person-centered therapy and now guided imagery, these are all just different skills and techniques that a therapist might use, you know, if you go see a therapist. And that's why we want you to be aware of what the different skills and techniques are. And if you're looking for a therapist with a specific style, then you can know what to ask and how to ask the questions. So just in about 2 minutes, Benny, what are maybe two or three questions that a client should ask if they are looking for a good therapist who utilizes guided imagery?
For guided imagery, I think they should ask, will you help me through this process? I've heard about this skill. I've heard about this technique. But I don't think, if they don't think they can do it, you know, could you walk me through it? Could you help me through it? And I'll let you know. And if I can't do it, are there other options for me? I think it would benefit me, but are there other options besides the guided imagery?
My question as well along the line of guided imagery, if a client happens to go to a therapist who's using, let's say, cognitive behavioral therapy, can it morph into the client utilizing guided imagery as well as the cognitive behavioral therapy? It's not a standalone therapy that has to be done by itself, is it?
No, not at all. And I usually do it in conjunction with. I use a lot of person-centered. We talked about this on the show. And CBT is very big in therapy. There are a multitude of different therapeutic techniques. There are not 3, 5, 10. There are a multitude of them. So these are just a couple of the skills that I personally use myself.
And I think a lot of times also, as you speak of the multitudes of different types of therapies, sometimes you'll find even a therapist who might use CBT for one client and maybe guided imagery for another one and person-centered therapy for another as well. But I think it's really important that you find the therapist or the skills and techniques that work for you as you move through this journey of mental health.
I agree. There are clients who I've seen who are familiar with CBT and they come in wanting that. I like that because they know what they want. But there are also clients who are more psychoanalytic and they want to lay on the couch and talk and be listened to and go back to their past and not relive it, but feel like something is coming from there that is causing them to be stagnant. So again, there are multitudes of them. We pretty much have studied them all, but we all, I think, therapists choose a couple of them in their toolbox to pull from.
Right. I've always been told it's okay to know a little bit about all the different techniques, but find maybe 2 or 3 that you stick with and you learn and immerse yourself in it so that you know how to use it to better help the client. Because in the end, that's the bottom line, is the client getting better by the skills and techniques that you are using?
And one of the good things about seeking therapists are annually we go to trainings to learn new therapies, new techniques, and even revisit old ones that we studied in school. So we stay on top of the therapeutic skills to offer them to our clients.
And guys, as we wrap down this another exciting episode of On the Couch, I want to give a shout out and hopefully encourage you guys. Next week, we're going to have a special guest on, a couple of special guests here in the studio with us. So next week, be sure and listen at 8 a.m. And again, if you miss our broadcast live, you can always listen to it on a podcast. We're available on Stitcher now, and we're working to get on iTunes and the other one, and I can't remember the name of it, but we'll get on them. As we do, we will let you know as well.
Please remember also our number, 917-889-3093. Also, email us at
listen to onthecouch@gmail.com.
Again, that's listentoonthecouch@gmail.com. We do read and we'll respond to your email.
This is On the Couch, your connection to the world of mental health. Exploring all things related to daily living. Your host, Benny Massey, LPCC, and Earl J. Bell, LCSW.